Welcome to the Financial Markets Insights podcast, brought to you by the Realization Group, where we bring together the best minds in the financial and capital markets industry to discuss all the latest trends and news. Our podcast guest host for today is Matthew Chung, CEO of iPushPull, and our guest speaker today is Mark Wolfenden, Managing Director of Euromoney Trade Data. In this episode, the first in our new series on financial markets data insights, we will be discussing how to leapfrog your legacy technology systems when it comes to market reference data and asking why data and workflow need to go hand in hand in order to give firms an edge in capital markets in the years ahead.
Hi, this is Matthew Chung, and I'm a partner firm of Euromoney Trade Data. And today we're talking to Mark Wolfenden, who's the Managing Director. Mark, can you just introduce yourself and just tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure, thanks, Matt. Mark Wolfenden. Been running Trade Data now for 21 plus years, and we've seen quite a few changes along the way in the market and within the firm, and absolutely delighted to be talking about the subject of innovation with you today.
So I thought it'd be really interesting to talk about how we're working together. So I'm from iPushPull, and like I said, we're a partner firm with Euromoney. And I've always been very impressed with you, Mark, in how you've worked with us and collaborated with us, and actually the kind of the vision and longer term vision that you've had while we've been looking at this project from inception through to now rolling it out at scale. So one of the things I was wanting to talk about was, you know, one of the biggest hurdles companies face when it comes to digital transformation is the assumption that it's going to require major change management programs. So how have you, as Euromoney, tackled this when it comes to kind of innovation more generally, and also then specifically in the world of reference data?
Yes, well, thanks for your kind words prefacing that, Matt. I think it really does depend on the scale of legacy and technical debt you have as a company throughout your operation and what reliance you do place on those various components. To that end, I think the trade data model has been more to do with initially incremental change over Big Bang, although initially we did have to migrate probably over a decade ago now from a very old platform. And, you know, I can remember literally taking the physical servers in one office location to another, and that was our business in the boot of our car. And so things have definitely moved on since then, and you know, the risk is much, much better managed, and we'll talk about cloud, as I know, coming up in the conversation. But I think change management skills are core for any business to master, whether that's applied to human or indeed, as we're looking at here, as tech resources. And you need to be pretty proficient in that. And the key steps, as most of you know from many of your management studies, is to unfreeze change and refreeze. And you can apply that process to technology just as much as you can apply it when you're looking at your organization and folk within it. So for us, the innovation has always been there from the get-go. And so when we were looking at digital transformation, for example, we were fully in the cloud early mid 2019. And when I say fully in the cloud, every part of the operation, from the way we acquired data to the way we process it in production, and then when we how we deliver it to our clients. And so we had the factory and the operation in the cloud. And so when we begin to look at the technology that we wanted to discuss further in this conversation, it was our particular needs were surrounding distribution channels and workflow platforms. So I think we've been part of the digital transformation for quite a while. And that's no real surprise, because we are at the core of it a data management company, and we have to be very proficient in all that means.
And at what point in time did you make the decisions to I suppose, stay ahead of the pack in terms of technology and data? Like you said, you're fully on the cloud in 2019. Yeah. So presumably that migration and trend towards that happened a few years before then.
Yes.
What sparked the catalyst for moving to the cloud?
Yeah, and we did that in 2019, and it's actually a great question. As a business, we hold a particular position of trust in the industry, and with that trust comes the integrity needed to balance the security of essential data services against the innovation, the risk of innovation, of developing even more enhanced services that will, of course, add benefit by resolving ever more granular pain points to our clients. But there is change risk in that. So when we looked at our operation, it was pretty much physical servers on premise. We obviously had offsite backups of the core pieces of data that we need. But where we look at some of the applications we were using, they were kind of joined at the hip in terms of local network as opposed to over the internet or cloud-based. And it's because we, in a number of our clients, we are deemed to be a strategically important vendor. It is a given that we proactively manage the risks in our business and therefore can continue to deliver to underwrite our clients' business every day that we're an operation. So we're looking at this really was born out of initially risk assessment and the need to really remove the physical risk or on-premise risk to the business. And that's when we actually started, and that's what triggered the migration to cloud. As it happened, one of our main GUIs for managing data was browser-based. That wasn't too much of a difficulty to migrate. But we also had a number of legacy systems that we had to set up in the cloud. A lot of our data acquisition processes, where we're connecting to feeds from businesses and other market data sources, they were all pretty much born in the cloud, as it were. So it is really making sure we put everything into the cloud. And we could deliver the bandwidth and latency anywhere in the world, really, to our clients who were taking or accessing our data through online services, but also our data team who were accessing via the browser app through the internet, the core data management platform, which was sort of proprietary to us. So really, that's what triggered the main move to cloud. But as we all know, it doesn't stop there, and it's been really interesting to see the acceleration of adoption of cloud. And there was, even in 2019, there were some reservations from the sort of the industry about moving sensitive and confidential information off premise, client positions, client data, given all of the rules under certainly European legislation, GDPR, and all that. So there was a major, it's been very pleasing to see I think the cloud and the cloud service providers have also stepped up in terms of the understanding that the perception of security risk and in some cases real actual risk. And those services have evolved in parallel to the sort of journey that Trade Data has had, and we've obviously taken advantage of that. And I think the industry has also taken advantage of that and is now much more prepared, and in fact we're forced to look at cloud-based solutions from the start of the pandemic. But that's also had its issues for many large institutions who post-pandemic, if we can call it that at the moment, some institutions are still demanding their office workers still go into the office. And that's driven, I think, more by management philosophy, but also in some cases by the more efficient use of large embedded systems that weren't necessarily on-premise, but they weren't as well geared up for distributing access, as it were, to wherever workers might be. And so I think there is a bit of a polarization as to the action that institutions have had, financial institutions have had, to whether they're going to really revert to pre-pandemic sort of operation, but with improvements that are, which have certainly been delivered in technology, not the least through video and collaboration type of technologies, whereas other firms may look at take advantage of it. And an example, I know there's one particular financial institution that's literally cleared two C-level suite floors of Canary Wharf, repurposing them for collaboration space when folk are in, but also have set up a program of identifying local sort of walk-in secure premises, whether that's the transformation of the retail, the high street from what it was to what it might be going forward, into literally local drop-ins for employees to literally work from home but have a place locally to go. So that in its own way is sparking a real interest, and this divide will be really interesting to monitor as to whether or not any competitive advantages come out of this, and whether any service levels are improved or not. So you do have this sort of bifurcation of response to in a post-pandemic world. But I think most relevant to this conversation, the enabling technology to achieve pretty much whatever anything you want, has been delivered and continues to be improved.
So essentially, it was a stick that beat you into looking at a cloud through operational risk.
It was more like a birch leaf that we thrashed ourselves with. it was very much a driver. And so that was the sort of core operation. But when we look at the looking at our business development outlook, having that really strong position in the cloud. So I think I've recounted this story before, but literally in March, early March 2020, we'd actually set up a week-long all-person remote DR working test. And that was, I think it was on March the 9th, Monday. And the Monday after the stay-at-home lockdown was announced. So from that point, the company never went back from that perspective. And to the extent that all the operation was in the cloud, we have a head office. We're part of a Euromoney PLC, so we have a location in London. But we've actually since moved out of the old offices because they really were, in the end, rather superfluous. And we've gone the sort of hybrid route of not mandating anybody to come into the office. We have a working what we call working 3.0 policy from the PLC, which is very forward looking. So nobody's mandated to come into the office at any time. They can of their own free will, and all of the repurposing of booking systems have all been sort of changed from that perspective. And we've also set up local sort of offices that you can use on demand as well for those folk who really one of the consequences of the pandemic from a remote working and home working perspective was a clear difference between a home office environment, which for some people were fine, other people wasn't fine. And we obviously did the right thing in terms of providing monitors and equipment and seating and desks where required. But there are some number of folks who just don't really like working from home, so they need a place to go to. A number of surveys have been done, and it probably conforms to many of national, international surveys and results that have come out, that most people now, in trying to strike a work-life balance, wanted to come in like 1 or 2 days a week. There are some folk at the other end who want to come in every day of the week, and there's some folk who don't want to go in the office at all. But there is a huge social benefit from being in the office. So the hybrid approach that we've taken as well is to organise probably once a quarter a sort of all persons meeting in as it happens in this case the London office, where we actually get to meet and talk to each other in a formal presentation environment, and then a sort of social environment after that. So I think this talk would not have been able to have this sort of discussion without the technology to actually support remote working and collaboration. 18 months ago, well, 2 years ago, Teams were just sort of coming in, and you may have done the odd call, which was really really an exception to have a video call. It's now the norm, and it's unusual to have a phone call these days, really. But even that's being picked up by Teams through routing subs. It's sort of telephone conversations through there. So I think, so once we'd seen the benefits of the going to cloud, we had already begun looking at the next stage of our business development, which was we have a factory, and that's in operation, and it's servicing the needs of predominantly the sort of tier one banks in futures and options reference data. But there are a lot more firms who in the tier two and tier three areas that still require to trade, clear and settle in futures and options industry. And it was really a question of how we set ourselves up to tackle that market. I remember also a conversation with one of our big institutional clients, really shooting the breeze on what was the likely direction of travel of the consumption of both market data and reference data, and to be fair, any data in particular. I think if you look at the backdrop to that, that was probably the trigger conversation that then led me, in fact, to your door. We had known iPushPull over a number of years, and we knew the people in that business, and there was generally a respect in the industry for your innovative products. So when we looked at what we needed to be able to tackle second and third tier marketplaces, well, there are two things that we needed to do. One was to increase and further develop the partnerships with intermediary in the shape of platforms and delivery of service propositions, whether that was clearing settlement, whether that was order management, all that sort of goodly stuff. But we also needed workflow products and personal workflow products. The typical contract for service with larger clients is for a multiplicity of services and pretty much global geographies and all markets. It's clear that second and third tier required more granular data and different types of access to that data and potentially different commercial models to support that. And therefore, looking at the personal workflow products, going from literally a secure FTP service at the top end of tier ones to an Excel add-in was a major sort of leap forward in thinking. I know that sounds a bit trite, but the enablement of an Excel add-in allowed businesses to access our data at a relatively low entry point. And so we looked at, well, what else can we do on the sort of personal workflow front? And to that end, that's where we had those initial conversations. And what I wanted to do was to make sure that if we follow this sort of trend, then we would be behind the curve. So what I wanted to be was in front of that, that trend. The whole world of consumerism is trending towards on-demand payment for use of products and services. And I actually believe this is having an overspill effect on corporate business. Much of the underlying tech applied to business to business originates from the transactional needs of the public consumer at scale. And the sort of coordination of trading elements that need to be assembled and ready in a real-time environment is actually being driven by the same demand. But in reality, only a relatively small proportion of reference data is impacted, and only in near real time. And so the need to be able to access reference data in real time is true, but it's more an availability play rather than reducing the latency of the market in how it produces that reference data. So it was a need to understand what on-demand meant. It was needed to understand what commercial models that we would need to support that, given that there are a lot of very sophisticated models that you could look on a consumer type of services that they operate at the moment, and be whether that was viable or not, and also whether it was a risk to our existing business. most firms that we deal with currently are taking whole universe because they have onward clients that they don't really know what markets the end user clients are going to want to trade in. So there is an insurance policy in having a whole universe sets of data. The reality is that, as I said, we all are looking to, especially when you're beginning to build up a business, you're looking to say, well, you know, I don't really want to take on full blown costs because I really need to book some business first and build up the balance sheet and the book of business, and therefore, what other commercial models can I enjoy from literally being starting at a relatively small scale, but having the data that I need at a low scale and a low entry point, but being able to scale it up as the business grows as well. So it was, in a sense, a marketing experiment. It was a test of strategy that we integrated our data with a number of our AirPushPulse applications. We had known IPP over a number of years, but we did put you through a very intense due diligence process as part of Euromoney's vendor management setup. But the whole integration was managed really well by both parties. So we have an Excel add-in, we have applications that sit in Teams and Slack and Symfony and OpenFin, and we also have chatbot. We have our own chatbot called Tada. And these were all experiments as to, no one really knows, for example, what's going to break out in terms of preferred application or not. And I happen to know that for example, I think it's hedge funds, typically look at their association, they tend to do Slack a lot. And so if we wanted to engage with the hedge fund community, then really we'd have to have a springboard off Slack to do that. And that's what your application, it gives us the ability to clients to access the data through those applications and through those platforms. So it was really a journey of experiment. For example, we also looked at our current commercial model, looked at every discrete element of data and how that was grouped for particular applications and to solve particular pain points, from symbology to obviously just looking at contract enrichment reports for clients to reporting trades to the regulator. So we then broke that down, and after many, many months of work, we came up with a grid which said if you wanted to buy that piece of data or that attribute of data from that exchange for that product or that trading venue for that product, this is what it would cost you. And those are like fractional pence in a lot of cases. And then we looked at a number of models and curves as to how price curves as to how that could actually operate. Because the key thing is that on demand means that if you were to take exactly the same data that you take through bulk delivery at the moment via on-demand services, you should be paying a lot more for it, because the most efficient way of delivering really bulk data is FTP. The ability to access on-demand data through those different applications is naturally going to be the clients wanting to do that are wanting to really match their spend to their business operation from where they start to where they grow to, and therefore there's no frills in it. There's no additional margin in there. So it's really a question of at what point do you put your curve, a price curve in terms of selling data across the piece.
And can we touch on the approach that you mentioned? So you do have this innovative and experimental approach with how you started working with us.
Yep.
What advice would you give to other financial institutions or firms like yourselves who are looking to partner with smaller firms, smaller agile firms, startups that always have their finger on the pulse of technology? What advice would you have in dealing with them, both in terms of how you scope out a project and the time frames and lengths of success? What are the success criterias? And also how to, if I'm a firm looking to work and partner with a startup, how should I kind of budget for that as well?
Yep. That's a big question. I'll do it my best shot. I think it really depends on, like most things, where you start from. What is your immediate problem? And I think one thing that for three quarters of its life, the business and the trade data brand was really operating as a startup under the PLC, and therefore it's in those formative years, the longevity of folk who were in the business that still remain in the business, we managed to retain that essential startup spirit in developing the business. So we know what it feels like. So, but when you're looking at in entrepreneurs, again, it really depends on the scale of problem that faces you. I've always made the analogy, and many folk would have heard me make this analogy before about District General Hospital, that you build up systems and trading platforms over many, many years. Some of it's legacy that you can't really ever get rid of. And you're faced with the current issues that District General Hospitals have, and all the best they can do is build on it. It's not very often you get an opportunity to build a completely new greenfield hospital at scale. So you have to break down the problem into its smallest parts and then begin to reconnect the dots, and using technology to actually do that. And at scale means starting from small scale focus with best in breed components. There is a methodology which may be appropriate called the Strangler pattern, which looks at your key data flows that move around the various different components of your trading system and support systems to trading. And if you can identify the key movements of data, if you can exit the old system, go through route that through a best of breed function that is better than providing the function that's already in the existing legacy system, and then re-inject that further down into the process, that is strangler pattern. And you continue to do that until all of a sudden the core legacy system is really not of much use. So it's a major re-plumbing exercise. And whilst I'm sure there are many more sophisticated ways of explaining it, it really is about plumbing. But instead of a spanner in a hand, it's a keyboard. This is very much a software innovation, software product innovation that allows this type of approach. And so when we look at your products specifically, Matt, they are able to do a very specific thing or a number of things, and they can be joined up in any way. So you do need this sort of software glue to allow the free flow of data through a system, and obviously not forgetting the latency issues with that. And I think this is where the cloud is beginning to step up more fully. There have been a number of sessions about how can cloud support real-time trading, real-time pricing, and it's only a question of time as far as I see that. But you have to be bold, you have to be brave. I think it's very difficult to go with a justification for a change investment where eye-watering sums are there for legacy systems. So if you wanted to swap out a complete back office system from X to Y, that is where the real capitalization is a real constraint to actually make the case for that. If you can take the core functions of the, in this example, clear and settlement process, and break them down and replicate those functions, but doing it in either a smarter way or in a better, a more feature-rich way, then you just exit the data, put it through the application, and bring it back into the flow. So it really is, your heart goes out to those folk who have really huge back-end legacy systems. At some point, and at what point you can argue, is are you really at a competitive disadvantage? I think it's more about creating competitive advantage looking forward.
And to round off this conversation, you mentioned tier twos and tier threes, and a lot of, if not all of the tier ones already use you, but you want to be able to expand out the coverage that you have amongst financial institutions, and having distributed access and integrated workflow into applications people are using is an improvement in delivery, which you think is going to help. Can you talk about, just to finish off, the benefits if you're a tier two or tier three financial institution and you want this access to reference data? What's the benefits of working with you right now?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we commissioned a research, some research at the back end of last year, in fact, which is very, very relevant. And it talked about the squeeze middle, where if you're, for example, a tier two firm, you have a lot of the overheads in terms of regulatory reporting, major cost of market data services, and yet you may not have a bigger balance sheet. And you're, as a tier two, you've already set out your stall as to where you want to trade in the marketplace. You're not trading at the same scale as tier one, yet you face a lot of the same overheads that tier ones face. Tier threes are more focused, and they're probably more agile anyway, and they have an opportunity there to literally plug and play systems without having necessarily the IT resources to put a lot of this together. So they're more looking more at off the shelf total solutions for that. So the market sort of fragments in that way to a great extent. So the benefits are if you look at the accessibility of alternative sources of market data and reference data beyond the big sort of three to four, then this is a great way of actually doing that. Yes, we trade data to supply the tier one banks and is the sort of main provider in that area. So the data is sort of trusted by tier ones, and the ability to access it through relatively low entry points and low overheads of IT through whatever application really, really sort of floats your boat, from literally having an Excel add-in and having accounts set up that to viewing online, to really leveraging the collaboration systems that you may have within the business, whether that's Teams or Slack or Symfony, which is obviously a major piece of messaging software between businesses. So the key thing is to access good value for money data, only pay for what you use, and do it in a way that doesn't really give you a major IT overhead, and is a quick time to market as well. So they're the sort of key benefits, and it's really pleasing to see that the sort of technology that you've been providing has really sort of enabled that, even to be spoken about in a discussion about adding value to businesses.
Brilliant, thank you very much, Mark. So we look forward to seeing how a new commercial model of pay-as-you-go data, alongside improvements in technology and efficiency, and see how this takes reference data from here on. So Mark Wolfenden, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Thanks to all our listeners for joining us. You've been listening to the monthly Financial Markets Insights podcast, guest hosted by Matthew Chung. Subscribe to the podcast to stay informed of all our future shows, or you can sign up for our newsletter to get all the latest updates from The Realization Group at therealizationgroup.com. That's The Realization Group, realization.com. See you next time for more financial markets data insights.